Moncrief on News Talk.
It is one of those days in the capital where everyone who drives to work will have a story about how long it took. As you know, protests over the cost of fuel have caused near gridlock in Dublin. But do such protests work? What is the best strategy if you want government to address your concerns? Here's what the Taoiseach had to say about today's actions.
We respect people's right to protest. But what is not acceptable is people declaring that we will turn O'Connell Street into a car park. That's not acceptable. There are people with businesses on O'Connell Street who need to survive, who need footfall, who need people to be able to access those businesses. And anybody who just simply parks a truck in the middle of nowhere, there should be penalties, and there will be penalties.
Right, OK, he wasn't too impressed about that. We are joined, though, by Newstalk's political correspondent and host of the Let Me Explain podcast, Sean Defoe, to take us on a look back on some other protests and their varying degrees of effectiveness. Good afternoon, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Now, the first one, I suppose, and people, I suppose, of a certain age would remember the PAYE protests. They were back in the days when, I suppose, we paid a hell of a lot more tax than we do now.
Yeah, and these were over, this was the 1979-1980, it was over who specifically was paying tax, and about four-fifths of income tax at the time was paid by PAYE workers. And in the previous budget, the government had promised to tax farmers, actually. I mean, usually we're used to the farmers protesting. This was the opposite way around. When they were trying to bring farmers more into the tax net, they didn't do it because of pressure from farming lobbyists at the time, and instead got this massive, massive protest from PAYE workers talking not only about farmers, but about the self-employed and other areas of the economy as well. And at one stage in 1980, 700,000 people across Ireland came out to protest. That was one-fifth of the entire population. So literally one in five people on the in the Republic, at least, was protesting that particular day. And there's some wonderful archive audio. There's these angry voxes of real pure dubs in the RTÉ archives being interviewed by Mary McAleese, of all people, before her presidential days, obviously. And this will kind of give you an idea of how long ago it was from this particular report, which RTÉ was able to afford to hire a helicopter for.
Arrived by helicopter over the assembly point, the sight that greeted us was impressive. Thousands of people were standing, it seemed to us, in silence. Dublin lay like a model village below us, and these people who had come to protest their cause seemed, when viewed from afar, insignificant and ineffectual. But when we started counting heads and votes, that protest acquired a new perspective. And we had made a mistake. From 700 feet, we thought we were filming the beginning of a large march. In fact, this throng was the end of a procession that wound through the heart of the capital. At every landmark above which we paused, it seemed that thousands were joining the march from converging streets, tributaries joining the mainstream.
There you go. That's RTÉ in a helicopter. And that was pre-Celtic Tiger, I suppose. The if you consider a fifth of the population, Sean, went out on that protest on one particular day anyway, was it effective?
It wasn't. Yes, it obviously did change the tax stream and it has led, or partially led at least, to the reforms that we've seen up until now. Unfortunately for an awful lot of those workers, it was the end of the 70s into a very, very dark 80s. And after they had been promised an awful lot in previous elections, in particular that 1979 election that just didn't end up coming about, and we headed into the Darfur recession. So yes, the tax system did change, but people were out quite a lot of money anyway because there just wasn't any money around.
Yeah, there was only kind of so much they could do, I suppose, at the time. Now, I arguably one of the more effective protests in recent modern history was over medical cards for the elderly.
Yeah, and this was huge. And it kind of gives a real dichotomy of the elderly versus students, because people will remember the Grey Brigade and these protests that happened in the wake of all the cuts that came following 2008, and in particular, the cutting of the medical card. And actually, on the same day, protesting at the Dáil, there were 15,000 older people who were protesting at the cutting of the medical cards and other cuts to them. And there were 10,000 students separately, just by chance, on the same day, protesting at the reintroduction of student fees and a number of other protests. And if you look at sort of the effectiveness down the years, in 2015, everyone over 70 got access to a medical card, and there's a means test for a GP visit card, at least. And there's a means test now for medical cards, and we've seen that expanded over the last few years. Whereas still students are paying the levels of fees. They came down a little bit in the last budget, but they're still fighting that battle, what are we now, 17 years on from it. So it's just interesting the way that over the years, the government really kind of got a shock at that Grey Brigade, the people who do vote and came out and made their displeasure felt versus the students who, I guess they make the calculus, didn't really vote. And a lot of the things that happened, for example, a different rate of social welfare that came in during the crash, that if you're under 26, you were getting a different rate of social welfare. That's taken a long time to unwind. So it's just interesting how, even though you have similar numbers, maybe politicians pay attention to older voices more than youngers.
Yeah, and my memory of that, of those protests, is that politicians were somewhat taken by surprise by the large amounts of older people who turned out and then realised that it was politically perilous for them.
Completely, and maybe didn't think they would take to the streets, or maybe the anger would be coming for somewhere else. If you read back on some of the reports of the Minister for Older People, for example, getting up to speak and say how these changes actually were only going to affect less than 5% of pensioners, and she was booed off stage at the time by the people who had come out, and some of them who came out, it must be said, in having health difficulties, who found it very, very difficult to actually get to that protest. And it just hammered home, I suppose, a bit more from an area that the government thought maybe will be all right here. Turns out not so much.
Yeah. Now, water charges, a more recent set of protests, I suppose. Well, not that recent, but which went on for some time and spawned all sorts of side issues, including various legal cases. But that was an effective protest.
Probably the most effective one of the last 20 years, if you think about it, in that if you say to any politician now, even the hint of water charges, and you could make an argument for them in the, given how creaky our water infrastructure is, they will not go near it with a 10-foot barge pole. It completely is politically toxic, even 10 years on from the absolute worst of it. And we saw careers utterly change. I think of Joan Burton and what happened in Jobstown. You mentioned obviously the court cases that Paul Murphy and others ended up being acquitted for false imprisonment in those particular cases. And look, lots of people, they were very angry. It was an angry time in the country. You wonder if it was tried now, are people quite as annoyed? And people at the time were said, don't pay, don't let people in to install these sort of meters. And Paul Murphy, he was asked, what are they going to do for those people if, as a result, they end up getting a summons to court for not paying their water charges?
Like happened in the 1990s, right? Because this happened, they pursued people through the courts in the 1990s when water charges were defeated by a boycott campaign. And the campaign stood with people in the courts, provided, for the first number of cases, provided solicitors, barristers, etc. When the legal arguments had been tested, then provided legal advice for people in the courts. And that's what the We Won't Pay campaign that I'm involved in will be doing. It will be standing by people. People won't be left by themselves. But a very important point is that if we achieve high levels of non-payment, only a tiny, tiny minority of people can be brought to court.
Yeah, it was seriously effective. Why is it still such a so toxic politically?
I think it was the sheer level of anger, first off, that if you remember people targeting the workers who were coming in, the people who were going to be installed in it, the absolute vitriol in the Dáil. And they managed to get enough people out. I think no politician wanted to end up in a Joan Burton situation again. I think that shook a lot of people, that a sitting Taoiseach would end up effectively imprisoned in her car for a number of hours, and that there was very, very little that any of them could do. So they're not going to go anywhere near it. I actually remember, on a much lighter note, I moved into a house in 2015 about the time these were introduced, and we divided up all the bills, as you do with a couple of housemates at the time. I said, sure, I'll look after the water charges. Thankfully, never ended up having to pay a cent.
You had insider information there, Sean. That was totally unfair.
Yeah. Got away with it, yeah. I had to make it up a few years later and contribute to other bills, unfortunately. But sure, look.
And did it, now we heard Paul Murphy speaking there. Did it help Sinn Féin in a political sense?
I think it certainly helped some of the left-wing parties. I mean, Sinn Féin were in there. Really, Paul Murphy, the socialists, the people before profit, were the ones that got the massive attention for that. It helped Sinn Féin in the sense that they were kind of on the come up as it really, really damaged that government. It was probably the death knell for the Fine Gael Labour government that then went into that 2016 election. Really tarnished figures like Phil Hogan, like Joan Burton, Enda Kenny. And then suddenly you had a situation where a government couldn't be formed in 2016. That's where we ended up with confidence supply agreement between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, which was their first real tying at the hip. Because, like, the result and the fallout, not all because of water charges, but partly because of water charges, led to Enda Kenny offering coalition to Micheál Martin. He turned it down at the time. They ended up in this weird sort of mutual relationship that now down the line has led to a coalition. And all through that, Sinn Féin has been able to politically, you know, call them FFG, tie them at the hip. So long term, it did. But probably in the moment, it was more the damage to the government necessarily than this is a big win for Sinn Féin.
Now, as many people will probably be relate to this, no matter how much you jump up and down on your bin, your bin charges are still astronomical every few months. So that was less effective.
Well, yeah, because it ultimately ended up in the privatisation of the bin service. So this was when the corporations, when the city councils used to collect the bins in the early 2000s, and then there was the introduction of charges, and again led to massive protests, led to particularly in Dublin situations where bin men were being blocked from collecting the bin, where there was this mass don't pay, you know, don't pay for them, boycott it, and led to some prosecutions, including the jailing of a TD in Joe Higgins at the time, and Claire Daly, who was a councillor for the Socialist Party at the time as well. They both spent a month in jail for contempt of court because they were told, stay away from these, stop blocking the collections. And they decided not to do that, that they were going to make their stand on it. And it was a good bit later, I think it was 2009 or 10, that Dublin City Council was one of the last to fully privatise. And obviously that means you have to pay for your bins another way, and you have to battle among the different companies to try and get the best rate of it. There's been a lot of calls for councils to reverse that decision, to be make bin service collection public again. But I think there's a lot of fear, and certainly within Dublin Council in particular, the different councils out there, there was a huge loss being made because just people very simply weren't paying for it.
Yeah, indeed. It is interesting to parallel the water charges and the bin charges, and how one set of protests were less successful than the others. But I suppose the bin charges came in more gradually rather than it was one big bang.
Yeah, it was over a bit of time. Different councils did it on different levels as well. And like you said, I think because it happened, or at least started happening during the Celtic Tiger, there was maybe just a little bit less anger and bite out there. For a lot of people, the economy was still good, whereas the water charges came in the absolute depths of the recession, when people were already absolutely put to the collar, and the thought of one more tax just really got up people's backs when it came to it. So had maybe they tried to do that switch, or start that switch 10 years later when it came to bins, we could have seen something similar maybe.
Yeah. Now, one protest people may, well, I suppose a lot of people maybe weren't alive for it, but this is the Dunn store strikers who took a stance against apartheid. Did they get much support, at least initially?
No, this is remarkable. And it was sort of led by Mary Manning. She was a worker in the Dunns on Henry Street in Dublin. And after an instruction from her trade union, she refused to, I think it was two grapefruits initially, refused to handle it, refused to sell it, and was brought into a back room and said, you know, have a think about this. Do you want to change your mind and get with the program for this, and selling this produce from South Africa? She said no, and was suspended. And then 10 other workers of her co-workers went and says, well, you know, we're effectively going on strike here. We're going to stand outside, and until you reverse this decision, we're on strike. And it lasted for nearly 3 years after that. And for a lot of it, they didn't get any support. A lot of people, Mary Manning would have said, were confused about why exactly they were doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, what exactly is the point of protesting over whatever it is going on in South Africa? But ultimately, and this has really interesting parallels with the Occupied Territories Bill at the moment, it led to a ban on imports, and led to Ireland being, I think, the first Western country, certainly, to ban the import of South African goods as a sort of a protest against apartheid. When a few years later, public mood changed. We all know how that went. Nelson Mandela said that their protest was succor to him while he was imprisoned. And it went down in history as this big moment led by 10 or 11, really working class workers on Henry Street in Dublin. It's kind of remarkable, a note in history, but they stood strong. I think they were getting the equivalent of €21 a week as sort of strike pay, and were trying to survive on that at a difficult time through the 80s. So one of those ones that really had an impact beyond Ireland.
Yeah, indeed. It is a remarkable story. All right. Finally, the bus strike of 2015, which I think you've some personal experience of, Sean, but also led to court cases and all sorts of things.
This is just a remarkable one. So the court case was in relation to the likes of Dublin Bus and the Busairn saying that they were going to sue the workers if they went on strike. It was one of those, for, I remember just being out on picket lines, tons in sort of 2015 to 2017, covering this story with the different bus workers. Part of it was over pay, part of it was over privatisation of routes. The rail workers were out as well. I remember doing a piece for News Talk Breakfast, and they wanted me to get the Lewis to see how packed it was that morning when the buses were striking. And I got on in Houston, ready to take the phone call, and I thought, this is grand. And it was the only time I've ever been on an utterly silent Lewis. Not a single other person was speaking or making a noise. And I have had to do this live and be talking quite loudly about, well, you know, it's very busy here and it's packed, to the point where when we got to the next stop at Museum, someone literally pushed me off the Lewis to get me to shut up and stop disturbing their route in. And then to, it just got into a strange, talk about a minister handling it badly. Shane Ross was the transport minister. And this was particularly in 2017 when the rail strikes were on, and he'd refused to meet them. He'd been talking about going to North Korea in order to sort out, you know, North Korea in general, which really got up the nose of bus drivers. But it remains the only time I've had to ask a minister whether he regretted wearing a feather boa after, in the heart of the strikes and all this anger going on, he was pictured with Amanda Brunker at a GAA do wearing a feather boa. And it just, yeah, to talk about not, while refusing to meet rail workers, it should be said, not the best crisis management.
Yeah. Reading the room or not reading the room. Sean, thanks very much. I think getting kicked off of Lewis is probably an active example of radio criticism there. Thanks a million, Sean. That was Sean Defoe, News Talk's political correspondent and the host of Let Me Explain. One texter says, the Dun Stores strikers are legends. It proves boycotts work. Everyone should read labels for where things are made. Someone else says the water charges protest was extremely effective. It goes to show if nobody pays, the government are powerless to do anything but back down. Enda says, I was one of the organisers of the beef protests in 2019. The protests were working perfectly well up until other farm organisations got involved and blocked the factories. Once this happened, the protests fell apart because they were breaking the law. Up to that point, the factories remained open with a reduced intake of livestock and a reduced output of beef, and it had the meat processor almost at the table within 1 week. But others got involved and sabotaged the protests. Well, I take what you mean by sabotage. It wasn't deliberate, but perhaps that the strategy wasn't the most effective. Joe says that we keep hearing that famous phrase that the money simply isn't there. But what happened to the billions we got from the Apple tax money? We haven't heard another word about it since. Surely this money could be used to help in those hard times. And no, there wouldn't be any need for all the pain and protests. And someone else says, everyone has said that we should protest like the French. That's what they're doing now. Viva la protesters, says this Texas. And if you've ever been to Paris, it's like every other day there's a protest for something.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.